Microsoft is on a path to reposition itself as an AI company. Every team seemingly has been mandated to center its products and strategies around AI. This means that Microsoft's AI strategy, all up, is influencing every product and technology decision its executives are making. For enterprises with deep roots in the Microsoft world, Microsoft's new emphasis has some major implications around what you'll be buying, how you'll be buying it, and how you'll be managing and licensing it. Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing Podcast. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the Editor-in-Chief here at Directions. I'm your host for this series of podcasts for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. Today, we are talking about Microsoft's AI strategy, from chips to co-opetition, with Directions analyst Barry Briggs. Barry covers corporate governance, AI development platforms, and general CIO topics here at Directions. Before joining Directions in 2020, Barry worked at Microsoft for 12 years in a variety of roles, including as Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft's own IT organization. Barry also recently created a one-hour overview of Microsoft's evolving AI strategy for our YouTube channel, and I'll be talking about that episode more later on this podcast. Hi, Barry. Thank you so much for doing the show with me today.
Hi, Mary Jo. Great to be here with you.
Nice. All right. Let's start out by you giving me Microsoft's elevator pitch. What is its AI strategy? And you only have 2 minutes. Go.
Okay. 2 minutes. All right. Here we go. The way I think about it is Microsoft's AI strategy is two-pronged. One is what we've all heard about, Copilots. Copilots everywhere. Copilots in Microsoft 365, Copilots in Dynamics, Copilots in Sentinel, their security application and so on, and really providing a natural language interface to their application. So I can tell Word to write a document about Windows Server, for example. But I think of that as really as a Trojan horse. Copilots are a Trojan horse into their overarching AI strategy, which is really about AI-centric applications. What do I mean by that? Well, I really think that Microsoft is focusing on the developer experience of building AI applications, and where Copilots are really just the user interface component. And underneath that are language models, and underneath that are the enormous volumes of data that the language models can touch.
Okay.
And so if we think of that as kind of a new application model, let's just remember Microsoft at its core is a developer company.
Sure.
And they're providing us with all the tools that we developers can use to build these AI-centric applications. So two-pronged, Copilots to get you interested in using AI and familiar with using AI, and the tools for developers to help build these applications.
Okay. I like it. It's a good pitch. Okay. So you touched on a few of the buzzwords around this space, but there are so many concepts that people need to understand when it comes to AI in general and Microsoft's AI strategy. There's RAG, LLMs, Copilots, which you mentioned, agents. So I'm curious if somebody says, okay, what do I really need to know in this whole big batch of alphabet soup? What's the most important thing if I'm in the Microsoft Enterprise space?
Yeah, I mean, it's every day there's a new acronym or abbreviation or buzzword or something like that. I mean, this is a space which is evolving rapidly. And, you know, I sort of compare us to letting a thousand flowers bloom phase of AI, which, you know, we go through this every time with a new paradigm shift in computing. But I think actually one of the concepts, or two of the concepts that are settling down as things that are here to stay, are the language models and RAG. We all know what the language models are. We all use them pretty much every day. You go to ChatGPT, or you go to Perplexity, or Claude, or Gemini, or Llama, or what have you. Those are, you know, you're interacting with language models there. I'll tell you a funny story. I was chatting with a customer like a week or two after that epical event of November 30th, 2022, when ChatGPT was foisted upon the planet. And I was this customer was in Canada, the city government in Canada. And what they wanted to do was provide a portal to their citizens where the citizens could act, could ask, well, you know, when's the snowplow coming to my street? Good question, right? And gosh, we should be able to do that. And that really led to this new model of AI development called RAG, stands for Retrieval Augmented Generation. What does that mean? It really basically says, I've got a language model like ChatGPT or GPT-4 or Llama or what have you. And in the process of generating an answer to you, it can reach out to some enterprise data source like SQL Server or SharePoint or SAP or what have you. I mean, it's sort of the equivalent of saying, you know, the language model going, hey, SQL Server, you got something that can help me with this? Hey, you know, or hey, SharePoint, you got something that can help me with this? Yes, here's some stuff from my SQL search. You can smoosh it into your nice natural language answer, and out comes the response. And that's how that's how you can find out when the snowplow is coming to, you know, your street, or how many vacation days you have, or what have you, through a language model, through a chatbot. And that's called RAG. That's retrieval augmented generation. We augmented the generation of the answer by retrieving something from somewhere else. That, I think, is actually becoming dominant model, but it is kind of becoming a dominant model for building enterprise AI applications. It's what all the chatbots that you suddenly see springing up all over. And that actually is kind of an important concept for us.
Okay, that's good. I like how you break down the RAG thing, because whenever I hear RAG, I kind of think I know what it is, but thinking of it kind of in reverse order, the way you just described it, that's a good little trick. I like that.
Yeah, it's just, hey, SQL, got something that can help me with this answer. And that's really all the, and the important thing, by the way, Mary Jo, is that the answers that the model gets from these enterprise data sources are not used to train the model. So it doesn't become part of the public GPT or public Gemini or what have you. So, okay, you know, that's kind of the nice thing. Your data stays your data.
Okay, good. So speaking of buzzwords, I feel like everything we heard the last couple of years was copilot, copilot, copilot. And now in 2025, I feel like it's agents. Everything is an agent.
Isn't that the truth?
Everything is an agent. I think it would be helpful if you could explain how copilots and agents differ. And I'm curious if this is just like a semantic exercise, or you think people actually need to understand this and really concern themselves with agents.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's no really good universally accepted definition of the word agent. If you ask somebody, one person and the next person, you can get two wildly different answers, and they're probably both correct. The way I think about it is that agents are the natural evolution of LLMs and to some extent copilots. And so, you know, when you think about using a chatbot, for example, you're asking the question and it's giving you an answer, and you can ask it follow-ups and it'll give you more detail and so forth.
Yep.
An agent basically, however, is something that can take action on your behalf. It can exercise an API. And so, you know, the result of that is, you know, for example, whether you want to do this or not is an entirely different question. But, you know, if you could ask an agent to make a plane reservation on your behalf. So yeah, I can use a copilot to find out when the flights from Seattle to New York City are, and, you know, what flights might arrive at 2:30 p.m. on Friday and so on. But I might tell an agent, make that reservation on my behalf. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of applications for these kinds of agents. And I've seen a lot of really interesting ones. What, you know, they can guide you through writing a contract, for example. So if you're sitting in Word and you want a contract that matches your company template and follows your company's guidelines for writing a contract, there are agents that can do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're in the very early stages of this right now, and we really haven't thought through what all the implications are. You know, but what I think the natural logical conclusion of all this is applications that are built entirely of agents, mm-hmm. right? So think about that for just a second. So consider a CRM application, and this is a space where Mark Benioff at Salesforce has been talking a lot. But, you know, I can think about totally individualized customer journeys, totally personalized customer journeys and CRM based on all this massive amounts of data. All the communications that I have with my customers, you know, are completely personalized based on, you know, all the data that I have in my massive amounts of in Fabric or SQL or Cosmos DB and so forth. And I can have, you know, a campaign management agent. I can have an order management agent. I can have a sales follow-up agent and so forth. And all these little agents are like gears connecting to each other. And what's interesting about them is you program them in English.
Right.
Right. So now you're telling this agent, I want you to connect with this type of customer in this type of way. And you get this incredible amount of competitive differentiation, competitive uniqueness, and so forth. You can really build your differentiation right into the application. And it's not using code. And so, you know, you get this completely different style of building applications. Now, do you believe that? Is it well, first of all, but before we answer that question, let's say, when is this happening? Not tomorrow.
Right.
Maybe 3 years from now, maybe 5 years from now. That's the vision, at least, that I think Satya Nadella is mm-hmm. promulgating. It's the vision that Mark Benioff is promulgating. As I believe it or don't, right? And so, right. The vision, I think, is that over time, applications will be constructed more and more out of agents and less out of procedural code. And that's, I think, a pretty revolutionary view of what applications are.
It is. I was talking to someone recently who said he was on a group chat with a bunch of other tech people, and they were debating this very thing. Like, do you really think we could see apps made out of agents? And he said everybody was debating it back and forth. And I said, what was the conclusion? And he said, we don't believe it. I'm like, okay. So I said, I think it sounds cool and interesting and maybe someday possible, but I agree. I don't think it's like as close as some people seem to believe it is.
Well, I think, I completely agree. However, I would say in September 2022, nobody believed that we could talk to some sort of natural language engine and get back information based on the entire corpus of internet data. And then ChatGPT came along. So, I'm a little bit more open-minded in that I do think that we can achieve some parts of this vision in the future. It's not tomorrow.
Right.
I don't think it's next year. 3 to 5 years from now, I think if we've learned anything about how software evolves, we can't count anything out.
Yeah, fair. Okay. All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk about hardware. On the chip front, I've heard you say Microsoft is agnostic in its approach. What do you mean when you say that?
Well, I've written about this. They have their own AI chip called Maya. We haven't heard a whole lot about it, honestly. And so Microsoft is, why build their own chip? And the answer is that training AI is notoriously expensive, mm-hmm. right? You need specialized processors. You need to do enormous amounts of mathematics, mostly matrix multiplication and exponentiation at incredible scale, right? And that's why, it turns out, interestingly enough, that's exactly what GPUs do when you're playing video games and so forth. And that's why I say NVIDIA is the luckiest company on the planet, because the same technology is used for video games also turns out to be useful for AI. But anything you can do to make the training of AI faster, cheaper, and less power hungry is a good thing. And that's why Microsoft, that's why AWS, that's why Google all have investments in building their own hardware. That said, there's no question that NVIDIA is the acknowledged leader in the space. Why is that? Partly because of first mover advantage, partly because they all, nobody talks about this, but partly because they own the software stack as well. Right. So when I think about NVIDIA, I think about CUDA, which is the programming language that you use to talk to NVIDIA GPUs, and huge amounts of the AI universe are based on CUDA.
Okay. And then the other, on the flip side, data centers, right? So Microsoft's all in on building out as much capacity as it can to support all these growing AI workloads. They've said they plan to spend $80 billion in fiscal 2025, which ends in June, on AI data centers, even though there are some reports right now that that may be kind of being curtailed a bit with some sanity checks happening at the executive level. Who knows? But I want to ask you, do you think Microsoft is over-indexing on AI?
That's a really good question. And there's a lot of parts to the answer.
Right.
Let's peel back the onion a little bit. One is the investment...
I'm not quite sure how to help you with that.
Thank you. Is the investment in AI, in data centers, the $80 billion too much? We'll see. Clearly, I think the adoption of AI seems to be slowing a bit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether they really spend 80 billion, at least on part of the Microsoft pieces of all of this, we'll see. Whether the 80 billion turns out to be real or not, we'll see. The other question is a more pragmatic question, which is, can they really spend $80 billion in a year? And are there enough chips to support? Right. Are there enough construction firms to build all those data mm-hmm. centers and so forth? I mean, you know, full employment, I don't know. We'll see. So the other part of your question, though, is Microsoft over-indexing in AI, I think, is an important question. It's an important question both for Microsoft and for its shareholders and for its customers as well. Mm-hmm. You know, when I think about it, you know, I think the development of Windows has slowed. Mm-hmm. I think about other domains that Microsoft is pursuing, you know, the development, you know, for example, I mentioned this in my video. Microsoft has a wonderful product for building IoT applications, but we haven't heard a whole lot about it lately. And it's an area that, you know, it's an area that's whole IoT space is an area that's screaming for innovation, screaming for modernization. And yet we don't hear a whole lot about Microsoft's new AIT service, IoT services. Mm-hmm. So, and yet they're pretty cool, but they need to keep, you know, they need to keep developing, they need to keep evangelizing, they need to keep implementing them and so forth. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like, you know, there is kind of this possibility that Microsoft is indeed over-indexing on AI.
Yep, you're not alone in thinking that.
Yeah.
Inside and outside.
One of the things, incidentally, speaking of AI and Windows, is, and we talk about this in some of our editorial meetings from time to time, is, you know, the Windows Copilot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, for me, that was an enormous disappointment because I've just upgraded my computer, but I used to have a pretty high-end computer that occasionally crashed. And I would have loved to have been able to ask Windows Copilot, why did you crash? I mean, it should be able to answer that question. It's got gigabytes of log data in the Event Viewer and so on, all that stuff. And yet, it's an area where I think, you know, they could train a language model on, yet they haven't. It's really, right. You know, Windows Copilot has been, you know, Cortana +++.
True. Or minus minus. Taking things away.
yeah. Good point.
Okay. On that note, let's take a quick break so we can talk about YouTube. Directions on Microsoft has a YouTube channel where we've been posting our podcasts. And we also just recently added a couple of new videos that you will not want to miss. Directions analyst Rob Horowitz is kicking off a new Microsoft Licensing Basics series on our channel, and he has posted his first episode called Units of Measure. This is meant to help you learn how Microsoft charges customers for its products and services. And Rob covers everything from per user and per device licenses and concerns to capacity and consumption licenses and gotchas associated with them. And we have a great explainer all about Microsoft's AI strategy from the one and only Barry Briggs, who we're talking to today on our podcast. In that explainer, Barry covers everything from processors to copilots and agents, RAG, apps, models, AI dev, management tools, and more. And it's just 1 hour. So if you are listening to this podcast today and you have not yet checked out the video that goes with it, you should. Make sure you don't miss any of our new content by subscribing today to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@directions on Microsoft. Okay, back to Barry's crash course on Microsoft's AI strategy. Let's get into the ever-changing AI landscape for a bit. So Microsoft got a leg up on the competition early when they bet on OpenAI. But these days, it really does feel like the two, OpenAI and Microsoft, are frenemies more than friends. I'm curious if you think that's true and if it matters at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure it matters.
I certainly
think that the relationship has changed in the very short time that's existed. It's only been, what, 2.5 years or so since they've invested, you know, at least the rumor is $13 billion.
Right.
And it's clear that, you know, Microsoft got a huge marketing benefit by this close relationship, getting exclusive access to the GPT models right after ChatGPT was introduced. And then, you know, the stranger than truth thing happened, which was language models, to my surprise, and I think to a lot of people's surprises, became commodities. Right. Suddenly, you know, Google had Gemini, Meta had Llama, you know, and if you look on, and now if you look on, if you look on the Hugging Face model repository, there are over 1 million models available. So the whole notion of, you know, a model, which we thought was something that was going to be, you know, highly unique and highly valuable, has gotten, you know, much more commoditized. So, which is interesting, because, well, we'll come back to why that's actually good for Microsoft in a second. But in terms of OpenAI, Microsoft still has a very close relationship at the developer level with OpenAI. And that's good for them, because that still means, I think, that the models that OpenAI provides are premium models. What does that mean? Well, because they have the close relationship with OpenAI, you know, Microsoft is in a position to influence the development of the models, meaning they can infuse OpenAI's models with things like their responsible AI principles and, you know, preventing harmful content and all that sort of thing, which you're not likely to get, or maybe you don't get as much, or maybe you just don't believe what the other companies are doing with the open source or public domain models that are available elsewhere. So in some sense, right, I still think that the models from OpenAI are first among equals, and Microsoft gets, by virtue of their relationship with OpenAI, a lot of insight into all of this.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they didn't take a dependency on OpenAI, which was brilliant in my opinion. You know, so there's 1,847 models available on the Azure AI Foundry, which is their development environment for AI applications. And you can take your pick. If you want to try, see if Llama is better or DeepSeek is better for your application than GPT-4o. Go for it. Try it. Microsoft has no problem with that, because they are in the application space. They want you to build AI-centric applications. And whether you use the OpenAI models or whether you use somebody else's is not as important as the fact that you are building AI-centric models on Azure. So, you know, I think that, you know, the relationship has been good for Microsoft, because from a marketing standpoint, they got a huge leapfrog over the competition. Mm-hmm. You got mindshare as a result of their early relationship with them. They absolutely, for the first time I can remember, Microsoft had first mover advantage in the AI space, and they've really taken advantage of that. You know, but the relationship's evolved.
Yep, indeed. So let's talk about how it is evolving, because OpenAI is now part of something called the Stargate Coalition with Oracle and a bunch of other companies. And then we have DeepSeek on the other end. So there are all these new entrants into the AI space that I think, and I'm not alone, could give Microsoft some pretty serious competition and maybe even derail or at least influence the approach that Microsoft has been taking with AI so far. So what do you think is going to happen here?
Yeah, so this ties back to what I was saying just a moment ago, which is that Microsoft is not betting on the language models, right? They're really betting on your ability to build applications using the language models that are hosted in Azure. So when remember back in the 90s and the 2000s, we used to talk about the three-tier model for applications. Mm-hmm. There was the UI layer, there was the business logic layer, and there was persistent data, you know, SQL or relational data. So Now, what Microsoft seems to be evangelizing is this notion of a new three-tier model, which is Copilot, language models, and data. And Microsoft is making significant investments at all layers of those. However, they're not taking a bet on anything, on any particular one, any particular language model. Mm-hmm. It's really all about the applications, right? So as long as you're building, you know, a Copilot using their technologies, using the language model, which is hosted in Azure, using data, which is in SQL Server or Cosmos DB or Fabric and what have you, hosted in Azure, that's their strategy. That's their goal.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. So here at Directions, there's another hat you wear that I haven't talked about, which is compliance. You cover a lot of our compliance product strategies. And I feel like we would be remiss here if we didn't talk about the importance of governance and security of one's data estate when we talk about AI. What do customers need to be doing here?
Yeah, I think compliance is a key, and data governance and compliance so tightly interrelated. Right. But customers need to really look hard at their data estate as they think about deploying AI applications. You know, if you have a HR person who has that little sneaky little place in SharePoint where he or she keeps salary data and nobody knows about it, and you know it's secure because nobody knows that there's that file which is in a folder, which is in another folder, and so forth, and it's really hard to find. And so, well, Copilot can find it in an instant.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, protecting your data estate from unauthorized access so is critically important. And so when we look at, you know, Microsoft's suite of compliance technologies called mm-hmm. Purview, you know, things like data labeling and data encryption and access controls and so forth, all these AI technologies just amp up the importance of all of those functions, mm-hmm. right? And these are, I mean, the tools are there, but the people have to enforce them. And the organization as a whole has to be trained to use them and to abide by them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the things I tell customers is that, you know, training your people about what AI can do and what, you know, what you need to do with your data so that AI, your users are protected and your data is protected from unauthorized access is a critical function. Okay. Right? So last thing I'd say is look carefully at what your compliance responsibilities are. Here's an example. E-discovery, right? Mm-hmm. You need to be able to e-discover Copilot interactions, right? You know, so, you know, if somebody's using Copilot to ask about CEO salaries or confidential corporate plans or what have you, and somebody, you know, litigates that, you need to be able to find who did that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the amount to which you can e-discover that stuff varies significantly by your Microsoft 365 license. So you need to pay attention to that.
Okay, good point. All right, last question for you today. We've seen Microsoft put a stake in the ground with some pretty hefty prices for its AI wares, like Microsoft 365 Copilot at $30 per user per month. So I'm curious how you think what's happening with Microsoft and AI could affect how customers are billed and licensed for enterprise products as things move forward.
Well, I think, as you know, Mary Jo, I mean, I think Microsoft is seeing some pretty significant price pressure,
right,
on that $30 per user per month, and you know, in some cases we're seeing it being negotiable,
right?
And that's, I think, a reflection of the fact that, you know, our customers really seeing the value in Copilot so far, and I think it's early days yet. You know, as we start seeing more and more RAG applications built, and we start seeing Copilot more and more intertwined with corporate data sources, the ROI might actually become a little bit more apparent. It's not there yet, you know. But again, it's still early days, so we'll have to see. There's a lot of FOMO in the beginning. People are buying thousands upon thousands of Copilot licenses, and then you know, there was this kind of trough of disappointment where they realized maybe they weren't getting the ROI. But again, early days, start cooking them all up to the enterprise data sources. You start seeing these applications where they can help write contracts and so forth. Maybe we will see the value and the ROI pop up, and maybe we won't see significant pressure.
Yeah, and maybe we too will see some prices go down. I saw some adjustments on some agent prices this week, and I'm like, oh, maybe as things expand, we will actually see prices per message go down. Which would be
there's always this trade-off between, you know, driving ubiquity versus driving revenue, right?
Right.
And so, you know, it's always interesting to see sort of how Microsoft is attacking that dichotomy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much, Barry. I appreciate, and I know our listeners do too, all of these insights. Thanks.
My pleasure.
I want to remind our listeners they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics that you would like to hear our directions analysts cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via X or Blue Sky. We at Directions have converged our existing social media channels into a single platform, so give us a follow at DirectionsMSFT on X or Directions on Microsoft on Blue Sky to keep up with all of the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information. Thank you so much.